Paper 22, section 7. We didn't get quite through section 7. We're ready to start paragraph 10, which in the old single column version is on page 250, the last paragraph on the page. Okay, so let's quickly get ourselves kind of in the groove here again. Remember what the section is. We're reading about the technique of trinitization. You know, a little bit complex in places, especially as we finish up here with the section. Okay, so it'll be good to kind of touch on some of the kind of specific points and to get your individuality consciousness working again. So remember what the deal is. We're basically talking about creature trinitized sons in the context of trinitization, you know, not so much about deity trinitization, but creature trinitization. And most of what we talked about last time was where you have either two finaliters or two paradise of owners as the progenitors of this creature trinitized son. We'll really get into the mixed ones starting tonight. But in general, if you look back in the earlier paragraphs of this section, section 7 here, remember how in the second paragraph there they used that expression concept identity, concept hyphen identity, about these couples are going to embark upon the unique adventure of concept identity. And then in the fourth paragraph, they used that, you know, they chose to use an interesting word as a verb to essay. Now an essay, you know, in the verb you change the accent, to essay, and they said that you had these individuals who were going to essay to trinitize a creature being. Okay, so put those two together again like we did. That word essay, the reason they used that is it literally means to do out. You know, the ES is like an EX, meaning out. Okay? So to do out. You have in that first concept identity thing, you have a concept, a conjoint concept amongst this pair in their inner life, you know, inside, in their consciousness. And they're going to attempt to literally express that out in the outer life. You're gonna bring that idea, or I mean that concept, into the solidity of an idea and literally express it in a form, in an energy form that's personalizable by the Father. Okay. So from inner life to outer life. And then in that, see, what is that? The 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth paragraph, I think it is. Let's see, where is that? They use that expression. Towards the end of the fifth paragraph, when they give a little bit more details there, and they say that this couple is singly and jointly elected to make the paradisiacal effort to spiritualize, idealize, and actualize a selected and original concept. Okay, so we didn't bring that up, the details there. Let's do that right. Why do they get so specific there? You know, notice you're definitely doing individuality consciousness here. They're wanting you to distinguish between spiritualize, idealize, and actualize, and understand, you know, each step. So remember when you're, once you get into Havona, once you, in your ascension career, once you have made it up to your super universe headquarters and go into the central universe, you flip everything reciprocally. Instead of going, you've been striving from individuality through associativity to unity, all the way up through your super universe level ascension career. When you get there, you flip it around and unity becomes your foundation. And then you're going to attempt through a transcendent associativity to achieve a transcendent individuality. Okay, so you're in that mode. So if you're going to trinitize a creature, you're in that mode. So see, that's why they have it in that order. So you have this idea, you have this concept that you're going to express literally as an ideation, I suppose you could say. First of all, you need to establish the spiritual foundation for it. So that's the spiritualize. Because now that spirit is the foundation. Okay? And then that idea, you know, once it's expressed, that idea is going to associate with the ideals in that spirit foundation. So there's that idealize. You can have that associativity there. And then actualize. You know, literally express an individuality that's the embodiment of that idea. So you have unity, associativity, individuality. Spiritualize, idealize, actualize as an individual. Okay. And you'll see as we get in a ways, sometimes they will talk about the idea that's been expressed. Sometimes they'll talk about the ideal that's been expressed. Because you've made sure in this trinitization process that this idea is properly linked to unity, to the ideals in unity. So there's an ideal associated with this idea as well. And you can focus on either end of that association. The idea end or the ideal end. And they do that some. Okay, so that's what they're getting at there. Keep that in mind, that this whole bringing this creature and this being into existence is occurring in sort of that upper domain. It's above that whole domain that you ascended up through to get to the central universe. You're doing now something up in the upper reaches of the whole finite spectrum, as opposed to where you come from in those lower reaches. Okay, and then they remember, we won't go into all the details, but remember they talked about that spiritual biunification of the progenitors, how they glue themselves together, in a biunified, in other words, they're now as if they are one spirit. One unity-like nature within them that their personality is identified with. So in the single column, it's the first full paragraph on page 250. That would be, seventh paragraph in the other versions. Look in the middle of that paragraph. You see that statement about how one of the contracting and participating individuals undergoes a unique personality modification. Let's use that little sentence to get ourselves tuned. Yeah. Personality modification. You read that and you should go, wait a minute. I thought personality was changeless. And unchangeable. What do they mean, personality modification? Okay, so in other words, we've talked about this. When they're using the word personality here, do they mean literally the existential, existential personality itself? All right, they couldn't. That's changeless and unchangeable. So they must not mean personality like that. What is personality shorthand? The word personality is shorthand for what here? Yeah, basically it's personalized self, the selfhood, yeah.
That's good.
Right. There's a modification of the personalized self. The self can be modified. And that's what you're doing. You're modifying the unity aspect, the upper aspect of that self that the personality is identified with. The existential personality is unchanged, but it's now engaging a modified self. And so the personalized self is different. And like I've said, you have to always look at the context and figure out which way are they using the word personality. Do they mean it just simply, literally, directly, or is it shorthand for personalized self? Like, when you talk about the personalities in this room, we're really talking about the personalized selves. That's what we're thinking about. We're not wanting to focus on the more abstract, existential personality itself. Okay, so that's a nice little example of that. It occurs all over in the book. You've got to be on your toes and figure out which it is, or you'll misinterpret what's being said. Or at the very least, you'll find another sentence that says something like, personality is changeless, and you'll remember this one, and you'll think you've found an error in the book or something. Okay, so that's the basic thing. So they went through some of those details, and basically, in the context of talking about these like pairs of either perfected or perfect creatures, what about the mixed pairs? What happens with that creature trinitization? So let's start on paragraph 10 there.
The seven master spirits have authority to sanction the trinitizing union of finaliters and paradise Havona personalities, and such mixed liaisons are always successful. The resultant magnificent creature trinitized sons are representative of concepts unsuited to the comprehension of either the eternal creatures of paradise or the time creatures of space. Hence, they become the wards of the architects of the master universe. These trinitized sons of destiny embody ideas, ideals, and experience, which apparently pertain to a future universe age, and are therefore of no immediate practical value to either the super or central universe administrations. These unique sons of the children of time and the citizens of eternity are all held in reserve on Vice Gerrington, where they are engaged in the study of the concepts of time and the realities of eternity in a special sector of the sphere occupied by the secret colleges of the core of the Creator's sons.
Okay, whole bunch of little things. Let's take them one at a time, make sure we understand why. Okay, do you remember, we didn't touch on it, but back when we were reading in the earlier part of the section, They talked about how the master architects were involved in overseeing this creature trinitization. And then they mentioned that the seventh master spirit got in the act, in overseeing it. Now we have all seven master spirits. What's up? Okay. Why did we? Why was it logical that the seventh master spirit was involved when they mentioned that? Because that's the one that most directly represents the Trinity. And then, this is all about the Trinity here. Okay. There's another way that the master spirits have a relatively close relationship to the Trinity. Not individually like the seventh, but collectively. We'll get to that when we get to the end of the section. We'll explain the details of why all seven are involved when they talk about these trinitized sons of destiny at the end of the section. So we'll hold that for a moment. And then it says such mixed liaisons are always successful. Remember how sometimes the like liaisons weren't?
Right.
Why did we recognize that, seemed to make sense, that sometimes those like pairs might not be successful? Right, wasn't enough differential to power this literal, generation of energy phenomenon, if you will, to literally make your thoughts flesh, quote unquote. But here we have a significant differential, and so it's always successful. You're not doing like to like. You got different. So that it's saying that's always enough differential, no matter what all the minor details are. When you connect a perfected creature to a perfect creature in this extremely intimate way, liaison, you know, is the word they're using. So this is very, very intimate. You always are successful, just like the creator, you know, persons are always successful. So, you know, that also is like, oh, this is probably getting to be a lot higher phenomenon too. Not just, it's, you know, there's, it tells you more than just that there's more differential. It's also speaking to a greater closeness to the deities and what's going on. Okay. All right, so then you get in there in the middle, and they're talking about ideas. You know, they embody ideas, ideals, and experience, and they italicized experience. Okay, when we mentioned the ideas and ideals, see, they're talking about the two ends of this associative phenomenon that's being manifested. They don't have any relationship to what's normally going on with finite creatures, either in time or in eternity, you know, either in the central universe or outside the central universe. Well, so what does that mean? It must mean they don't really have a direct relationship to the finite experiential level. It's like, well, then what level do they have a direct, you know, in terms of just their basic you know, self nature? Well, it must be a direct relationship to the absentite experiential level. That's why they're the wards of the absentite beings, the master architects. I mean, this pair of finite creatures have produced a creature that's basically absentite. You know, not in the same purity sense that a master architect or other transcendentalers are, obviously, but they have some relationship to finite, or two finite creatures couldn't have brought them into existence. But nonetheless, when all is said and done, effectively, you know, virtually, they're absentite. They have so one could wonder, what do they see? You know, they must see the master universe at least in some way, like the other transcendentalers do. See the things that finite creatures can't see. You know, see the absentite universe, with absentite worlds and absentite geometry, and so very interesting little fact.
See, to me, it's a non sequitur. How can they embody experience? I'm assuming this is the finite experience of the two progenitors.
No. The moment they're brought into existence, they begin to experience. And any experience, you know, anything that is experiential is acquiring literal nature through that experience. Experience is literal. So, but see, they're pointing out that the only reason that literal, you know, like as a finality, you are your experience, is that sense of the literalness of how you've acquired, you know, incorporated experience into your being. Okay, but in order for this experience that they are progressively embodying to be basically absentite experience and not finite experience, those ideas and ideals that are behind that, I mean, you have this. You set up this associativity between the idea and the ideal, and they're experiencing in that flow between that individuality and that unity. That's where that experience is between those two poles, the idea and the ideal that they embody. Those poles must be, I mean, essentially transcendent to begin with, in order for this association to be such. So in other words, see, not only is there enough differential between a perfect and a perfected creature to always power the process, but it so powers that it basically pushes it up out of the finite. That's got some serious voltage behind it. Okay, that's what's happening here.
Do these creatures, do they just pop up?
Well, I mean, most. However you want to imagine primary midwares or secondary midwares or any of these, you know, angels or anything coming to existence, they would do it the same way. I mean, I don't know how we want to think about it. Do they just sort of like coalesce before your eyes out of the mists or something? I don't know how you think about this.
Really nice outfits on.
Yeah. Or what? You know, it's hard to know.
And I wonder if these guys don't have as much of a, you know, like, you know, the light couples are taking an age to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if this maybe is not
That's a thought. It might, yeah, it might be.
If you got enough voltage to compensate.
Mm-hmm, yeah, perhaps. Something. Perhaps. It's not as difficult, yeah. But then the fact that you're trying to produce something that's so transcendent, that might make up for, yeah.
Yeah.
So, hard to know.
Interesting.
Okay. And then the last thing. Okay, so they become, you know, they go to Vice Yerington. You know, we've already noticed that a number of times, that's the place where all this stuff that's really about the next age gets secreted. Okay, it's on Vice Yerington. Now the next paper about solitary messengers will, you know, get more of this story about these, about that sequestration on Vice Yerington of these Trinitized Sons of Destiny. But then that last little bit. So why? Why does it make sense that they're studying at the secret colleges of the core of the Creator Sons? There's something you know from the Jesus papers about Creator Sons that allows you to understand why it's the Creator Sons College that they're studying at. What are they studying here? They say that they're unique sons of the children of time and the citizens of eternity, and they're studying the concepts of time and the realities of eternity. Is that enough of a clue? Who are the living links between time and eternity? Who could teach a creature who is literally the superadditive consequence of the relationship between time and eternity? One of these Trinitized Sons of Destiny. Someone who is the living link between time and eternity. A Creator Son. That's why they're teaching them. They know that association. What happens when you connect time to eternity? They embody that. A Creator Son does. So that's why they're at the Creator Son Colleges, because they're the living links between time and eternity. Okay, so see, if you just go through it, every little thing that's sort of a pithy nugget, see if you can figure it out. Why that is. Is there something that you know, or whatever, that'll help you to understand that more? If it's just a bunch of words, it's of, you know, you're wasting your time reading it. You got to try to somehow get something out of it. Find something you can get your hands on and go, wait a minute, I understand that. I know why that is. It isn't just because it says it is. I know why that is. It has to say that. I could have written that now. Yeah. all right, so...
Who lives on Vice Yerington?
Well, a whole bunch of beings they don't reveal. But it's really associated with Trinitization. There's two worlds, Vice Yerington and Solitarington, and they're heavily associated, especially Vice Yerington, with Trinitization beings. You know, the fact that, like I mentioned, solitary messengers are going to be associated with this in the other Trinitization world. Solitarington.
Right.
I see there's that linkage.
Right.
Yep.
The whole procedure of us ascending to become finaliters, mm-hmm. One aspect of it is that we're necessary to make these guys.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and notice what's necessary is much more the nature of yourself than your personality. It's much more, you're beginning to manifest things that that have to do with that second consecration. The fact that you've so perfectly consecrated your mind You can now manifest things that go way beyond what any amount of consecration of will can do. You're starting to really appreciate what happens when you bring the self up to the quality level that personality has been, you know, descended from. When it finally masters the self up to its potential, the self starts to do amazing things, almost creator-like things.
Not life.
You know, pretty darn close. They call it trinitization instead of creating, but you know, you're lit, you know, the very fact that you exist begins to have this literal being to represent the fact that you exist.
Why specifically is it called trinitization?
Just simply because it's a phenomenon that's rooted in the Trinity side of the original. That's what's fundamentally originating this. You know, a being is being originated. What side of the original is responsible for this origination of a being? The Paradise Trinity side. That's trinitization. If it's the first center side, Father side, then it's called creation. But you know, fundamentally, it's the original. If anything gets originated, it comes from the original. That's why it's called the original. Okay, it's the origin. Okay, but we finally have been revealed in the fifth epical revelation. There's two sides of the original. There's two different types of origination. Father-like and Trinity-like. Or, you know, it's really not, I mean, it's first center-like and Trinity-like. It's just, it isn't really fundamentally father or mother, but what immediately stems from those two sides is father and mother. Is it mother, father-like origination or mother-like origination? Trinitization is mother-like origination. Yeah. It's very mysterious. It seems to sort of just distill out of, you know, everything. Whereas father-like origination is very up in front, and you just, you know, zap, and there it is, you know? I mean, you know, you can put it on camera and watch all the details, put it in slow-mo, you know, and, okay, it's very out front, this creation thing that the father side of the original does. There's deep mystery in the other side of the original.
Makes a person out. Once they have created this being, though, then mm-hmm. they actually become a personality.
Right, the
so
father.
Then he just, after they've been created, then he just gives them a personality.
Yeah, that's the first paragraph of the next section.
Yeah, I mean that's
what he does. Just like with you. You were long before you had a personality engaged to yourself. You were a self. The self came into existence, and then the father identified a personality with it. Clued a personality to it.
But that's before I was even conceived.
No.
Oh, that's right. At conception.
Roughly age 6 is when that personality engaged you.
I thought that was just the thought of Josh. I didn't know that was the personality.
That's,
I thought
it's
that
everything.
Was before.
The Holy Spirit in circuits, that means there's a capacity to be have a personality identify with you. And now the,
I was thinking it was before we were even conceived.
Just like the personality modification, the existential personality itself existed before time began, but it wasn't identified with anything. But when you were age 6, roughly, that personality finally identified with a self, and now there is a personalized self, which we could call for short a personality. But we see we got to keep it separate. The personalized self is one thing. The personality itself is another thing. That's an existential fact. It's always existed. It doesn't have any temporal character to it. It just is, like the Father. Yeah. But its identification leading to a volitional being, a personalized self, that has some temporal component to it. There's some point in time and some place in space where that begins.
So what do you call the thing that we are mistaking then for personality in the unique behaviors of people before 6?
Temperament.
basically temperament. Except, like I've, you know, every time this comes up, I try to point out, you have to remember there's a very subtle thing, but it's not so much what people are going to be calling personality. But there is actually a subtle fact of pattern in play before roughly age six because of the creative mother spirit. She can put a purposing hand upon that pre-six-year-old self in just such a perfect way so that when at roughly age six, the father's purposing engages that self and she lets go, it's like there's no discontinuity. It's a seamless handoff from her to him in terms of the purposing. She has this very special personality that can serve in any personality's stead in her local universe until the father's personality and purposing engages.
So it seems like but
that's extremely subtle. I mean, you know, you have to remember even what I would tend to call personality in Chris isn't. You know, and he's a lot more than six. Okay?
And I'm a lot less than personality.
Most of what we call personality at any age is just temperament. It's just your relative genetic uniqueness. And the mind that's tuned to that genetics hence has a relative uniqueness. The personality is always the way down in the subtlety of all that very gross, coarse difference that we experience with individuals. That's just their self and that and what you would call temperament. We have different temperaments because we have different DNA. Yeah.
Relating back to what Jeanette was saying about the necessity of finaliters to make to have this occur, not all finaliters participate in finalization.
No, no.
Only a very select few.
Yeah, and I'd also they'll stress it again in a little bit, but remember, it's not just mortal finaliters too. It's all seven finaliters. Types of finaliters, and in every case, it's some subset, probably a very small subset. Of each of those different seven cores of finaliters are just such a self that they can do this. Again, it has nothing to do with personality, really, but whether or not you can do this. It all comes down to these two selves. Can two selves do this? Every personality is absolutely unique and sort of equal in that sense. I mean, that can't have anything to do with it, whether there's a success or failure here. It's the self. You're really starting to see the self shine, at the same luminosity that the personality has always had the potential to, in terms of being a component in what's going on. In other words, you're starting to see just as much of a profound mother phenomenon manifesting as you are a father phenomenon. The self comes from the mother. The personality comes from the father.
Concept idea that's being trinitized. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's for the future, though. So they,
especially these, by and large, it's for the future. Yeah.
So they've thought this concept for the future that they're probably not even aware of.
Right.
Are they
exactly. Aware of it? Right. See, I mean, no. That most likely.
Optimist vice chair.
They probably had. They were looking as far as they can see, which is not into the absonite. Mm-hmm. I think we have this concept. Well, little did they know that it's just like the answers to prayer. Little did they know that the answer to that conceptualization lied on the other side of supremacy. Just like little do we know that the answer to our prayer lies a million years down the road, perhaps, instead of right now.
Right. Be sure you allow enough time for an answer.
All right, yeah. Like 6 trillion years or something.
Even if letting trinitization go for a second, just the relationship between a perfected being and a perfect being must be a really dynamic relationship.
Yes, it is, and
voltage, baby.
And maybe just as long as we're kind of dwelling on this, just I'll remind you again fundamentally why you have the potential for this to go super supreme. When on when you're doing this on paradise, and on paradise you've become a resident of paradise because you now can have your first measure of direct relationship to the supreme experiential level in the outer life, not just the inner life, but in literally in the outer life, some relationship to the supreme experiential level. And that's what this, your supreme, you know, outer and supreme outer liaising here, okay? So at the very least, it's going to be right in the upper crusts of the finite what comes out of this, and it might actually pop through to the other side because it's right up there at the ceiling that you're doing this in the first place. Okay, supreme, you know, your ability to have a relationship with supremacy in the outer life is, two individuals' ability in that way is meeting. And the super additive consequence, if the voltage is high, could be quite super, literally super.
like sprites in the atmosphere.
Yeah. So that's what's going on. All right, now this next little paragraph, I'll stop you before we get to the end of it. They're going to bring in something that is very familiar. Just read here a little bit and I'll stop you.
The Supreme Being is the unification of three phases of deity reality. God the Supreme, the spiritual unification of certain finite aspects of the Paradise Trinity. The Almighty Supreme, power unification of the grand universe creators, and the supreme mind, the individual contribution of the third source and center and his coordinates to the reality of the supreme being.
Okay, just stop there. Hold on a second here. gotta get the keys out. Alright. Okay, so you've got a threefold thing happening there. That should look familiar to everyone who's been in Friday Night Study Group for a long time. We've got a couple of individualities or individuals that we know about, the Almighty Supreme and the Supreme Mind, another name for the Supreme Being. We're focusing on the mindal aspect. And in the first part, they do what they always do this early in the book. We're a long ways away from what paper and what section? 117, section 6, yes. Right. When they say God the Supreme, what are we talking about? We're talking about God the Mother, of course. But, you know, to be in parallel, if we're using those individuality names of the Almighty Supreme and the Supreme Mind, you know, what's the designation that we're looking for to have a consistent triplet here? The Universal Mother. Right? Universal Mother, the Almighty Supreme, and the Supreme Mind. Okay? We're talking about the focalizer, the summarizer, and the, you remember that third one? The encompasser. Mind encompasses. We're talking about the focalizer, the summarizer, and the encompasser, as they say up there. And I think that's paper 115, I think it is. Talking about the Universal Mother, the Almighty Supreme, and Supreme Mind. So why are they bringing this up here? Well, they want you, you know, if you've gotten to the point where you've sorted out some of the issues with God the Supreme, God the Mother, God the Almighty, and you have some thoughts you can work with in that regard. They want you to get that threefold pattern in your mind as you reflect on these three different flavors of creature trinitized sons. And you'll notice some parallel. Okay? So, you know, just when they're about to, you know, the rest of this paragraph, as she reads it, don't think what's going to follow in list 1, 2, 3 is just a simple literal. It's the spirit of this, of the threefoldness of God the Supreme is the same spirit of the threefoldness of these creature trinitized sons. Okay, so read the rest of that, and then numbers 1 and 2.
In their trinitization adventures, the superb creatures mm-hmm. like creators for a minute. In their trinitization adventures, the superb creatures of the central universe and paradise are engaged in a threefold exploration of the deity of the supreme, which results in the production of three orders of creature trinitized sons. 1. Ascender trinitized sons. In their creative efforts, the finaliters are attempting to trinitize certain conceptual realities of the Almighty Supreme, which they have experientially acquired in their ascension through time and space to paradise. 2. Paradise Havona trinitized sons. The creative efforts of the paradise citizens and the Havoners result in the trinitization of certain high spiritual aspects of the Supreme Being, which they have experientially acquired on a super supreme background bordering on the ultimate and the eternal.
Okay. So, go back up, the beginning of that previous paragraph, when they said, God the Supreme, the spiritual unification of certain finite aspects of the Paradise Trinity. And we've pointed this out many times, as it says in the book, the personal, spiritual nature of God the Supreme comes from the Trinity. Because what is that? It's the Mother. The personal purposive aspect is the Universal Mother. That fundamental linkage between Paradise Trinity and the Mother, and then the Mother part of what becomes the Supreme Being eventually. Okay, so when you're talking about Ascender trinitized sons, if Ascenders are going to trinitize, they have to have a relationship to the Trinity. How do those finaliters have a relationship to the Trinity? Well, they've acquired a measure of the nature of the Universal Mother, God the Mother. And the Mother is directly related to the Trinity. So through the Mother, they have that linkage to the Paradise Trinity so that they can trinitize. So that's why they can trinitize. Now, what do they trinitize? And that's what they're explaining here. So as you're ascending, especially when you're ascending through the super universe, out of the super universe level, you have a very definitive presence also of God the Almighty, of the Almighty, or the Almighty Supreme. And so as you ascend through that as an experiential creature, you're not just experiencing, it doesn't just go in one ear and out the other. Experiences are literal. You're literally acquiring a relationship to the nature that is the Almighty. So you're acquiring some of that flavor of nature, like a snowball rolling through Almighty stuff. You accumulate it. Okay? So, and then you get to the central universe, and that's where you really bring in the definitive acquiring of the nature of the Mother that you're going to go out revealing. God the Mother revealing, remember, in that second half of your career. And this is an example of doing that. You're revealing your acquirement of the nature of the Mother by being able to trinitize. Okay? And what you trinitize is certain conceptual realities of the Almighty Supreme. Some of that stuff that you acquired out in the super universe level. Okay? For the Paradise of Owners, okay, now why, they're going to trinitize. Why can they trinitize? Why do they have a relationship to the Paradise Trinity?
Well, Havona is the Trinity domain.
There's that. What kind of creatures are Paradise citizens and Havona natives?
Trinity
origin. Right, I mean, they're literally Trinity origin creatures. Okay, so they have an immediate relationship to the Paradise Trinity. So, not at all surprising that they could trinitize. Okay? Now, when they trinitize, what are they going to... what essence, or from what essence are they going to express?
Well,
an idea. We talked about this a little bit when we were talking about Havonis. It's getting a little bit complicated here. But what is this certain high spiritual aspects of the Supreme Being? What do they mean by that? You know, what are certain high spiritual aspects of the Supreme Being? Well, that's a presence in the central universe. You can think of a presence of the Supreme Being, an indirect presence of the Supreme Being, that you call the Supreme Spirit. Both S, you know, both capital S's. Thus, another name for the spirit presence of the Supreme Being in the central universe is the Supreme Spirit. When you're there, you're immersed in this presence called the Supreme Spirit. And what that Supreme Spirit is the reciprocal of what you have out in the super universe level. We call the finite upholder. That one name we use for the universal mother out here in the super universe level, the finite upholder. The reciprocal expression in the central universe is called the Supreme Spirit. It's basically the same thing. In other words, it's the aspect of the mother that you can directly have present in the central universe is what it amounts to. In the same sense that you have a creative mother spirit, a part of the creative mother spirit is just the creative spirit, the spirit part.
Yeah.
And then there's the more directly the mother part. See, think about an analogous thing. You have a more directly mother part, and then you have kind of the spirit part. And there's this sort of the dominance of the presence of those two depends on which universe you're in, the seven super universes or the central universe. Okay. So, but when all is said and done, through all that complexity, you've got these spirit creatures, these paradise of owners, who are acquiring their snowballs rolling around in the Supreme Spirit. They're acquiring some of that nature. Okay? And so when they trinitize, they express an idea that's distilled out of the essence of the mother as she's present in the central universe of the Supreme Spirit. Okay, so you can see that, so the two, they're kind of reciprocals. There's some complexity details, but when all is said and done, you have the mother and the Almighty, and one is expressing the Almighty, and the other is expressing the mother in the way that they can, and through the means that they can.
These guys have that same issue, right? Like the light couple issue?
Yeah, right. They'll fail sometimes,
they both
do. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. And apparently, because they always glue them together, I mean, even the difference between a paradise citizen and a Havona native is not enough. Yeah. Okay, so, because they're really both of eternity, sort of just a slightly different way. Okay, so that's what's going on with those two. So you have this kind of reciprocal thing with the Almighty and the Mother. So you can see why they brought up the three parts of the Supreme. And then that Supreme Mind thing must have something to do with what these Trinitized Sons of Destiny are about. So let's see what they say.
Three Trinitized Sons of Destiny. But when a finaliter and a paradise of owner together trinitize a new creature, this conjoint effort repercusses in certain phases of the supreme ultimate mind. The resulting creature trinitized sons are super creational. They represent actualities of supreme ultimate deity, which have not been otherwise experientially attained, and which therefore automatically fall within the province of the architects of the Master Universe, custodians of those things which transcend the creational limits of the present universe age. The Trinitized Sons of Destiny embody certain aspects of the unrevealed Master Universe function of the Supreme Ultimate. We do not know a great deal about these conjoined children of time and eternity, but we know much more than we are permitted to reveal.
But we can figure some of that out.
Yeah.
Okay, so to get you into this mode, think about in item number two, the thing that we didn't really talk about. Okay, that last part. They're saying that those Paradise of Owners have experientially acquired this nature on a super supreme background, bordering on the ultimate and the eternal. Okay, the basic super supreme nature that's in the central universe there is absonite. You know, the absonite mind of the central universe, which borders on the ultimate personality activity. Okay? But there's also some even higher things, and that's why they threw in and the eternal. Like, for instance, there's a being that we use that as an adjective, the eternal sun. He's the absolute spirit. Oh, yeah, what about the co-absolute, absolute sort of stuff? I mean, it goes all the way up. We know it does. I mean, sure, the lion's share, as we can understand it now, is absonite ultimate, but there is even higher stuff there. And that's what they're alluding to. When you're talking about, you know, when you talk about the co-absolute as an actuality, the reality is the absolute. You talk about absolute personality activity relative to that co-absoluteness. If you're looking top-down, the verbiage that they use for a bottom-up thing, where if you've come up through the finite and the absonite and get to the co-absolute and your personality activity is, you know, is the reality, they'll say supreme ultimate personality activity relative to that co-absolute nature. So, see, that's what's going on here. Something even more profound than immediately super supreme is in play. And when they say the simplest way to put all these things about supreme ultimate mind, supreme ultimate deity, okay, if you just say there is the supreme ultimate mind of the seven master spirits collectively functioning as supreme ultimate deity. This whole bit about supreme ultimate mind, supreme ultimate deity, what that is about, remember when we talked about the seven master spirits? You have the seven master spirits, but there's a super additive consequence of their collective functioning that's literal. Just like the Paradise Trinity is a literal fourth fact, there's a literal eighth fact. Do you remember what that was? What that's called? The term that they gave to us back there in that paper?
Creative mother
agency. No. It's called the sevenfold spirit. Oh. Not the sevenfold. That's, you know, we're not talking about the sevenfold. Not that. But we've got a spirit we're calling the sevenfold spirit. The sevenfold spirit is the supreme ultimate mind. It's literally supreme ultimate deity. Remember how when you talk about the master spirits, you talk about supreme and ultimate, but collectively there's a super additive consequence that goes to supreme ultimate. The sevenfold spirit is the supreme ultimate mind. Okay. So that's what's between the lines here, that the sevenfold spirit is involved in these Trinitized Sons of Destiny, something very, very transcendent. In other words, like they're saying, it has to do with, you know, beings that are out there in the master universe, and that which is encompassing the master universe and is over controlling all of that, you know, something that goes beyond the ultimate. Let's see, the supreme ultimate. Okay. Just like when they were talking about some of the supreme things, they brought in ultimate person, you know, like when we were talking about biunification, they talked about ultimate. So in other words, you know, if you're talking about, you know, that sort of a phenomenon, what's immediately transcendent of that that could be over-controlling that. Here we're talking about something that's fundamentally transcendent, so to get something that's above that and over-controlling, you got to go even higher than the ultimate. You got to go to the supreme ultimate. So these creatures, see, have to, they fit into the oversight of something that's transcendent of the master universe then. That which oversees the master universe, that which is transcendent of the master universe, has to oversee it. Just like the master architects that transcend the finite oversee the finite. All right, so that's what's going on.
Okay, now are these guys going to Vice Gerrington too?
Yeah, these are the ones that go to Vice Gerrington.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, these are the ones that go to Vicegerent.
And they're taught by the bridges.
All right. Let's see. Was there anything else in there? In terms of. When they say that they could have revealed some more, that's a challenge. They're saying, we've revealed enough where if you work on it, you should be able to deduce some of the things that we weren't allowed to tell you directly. Like we've talked about, that can begin to happen. When you start putting things together, you start deducing what's between the lines here at times. All right, you have something before we go on?
The sacred college is the core of the creator science.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So these Trinitized sense of destiny have no purpose.
Basically, yeah.
Learning.
But the creator sense do.
But remember how when we read about the creator sons, right up front, they reminded us of a little bit of a mystery there. There's more than 700,000 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there's more than 700,000, well, specifically, if there's more than 700,001, remember the firstborn one, then fundamentally that means even as creator sons, let alone master sons, they have something to do with that which goes beyond the finite. Well, and again, of course, they have to, because they're the living links between time and eternity. In other words, they span the whole range. Remember we talked about that, how they use deity, lowercase d, and they, when they bring in the absolute word, talking about creator sons, they have this absolute potential. You know, they span the whole spectrum from the bottom of the finite to the top of the absolute.
Well, we have the term, so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what this reminds me of. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they're so transcendently minded
mm-hmm.
that they have no finite.
Yeah, and a creator son, on the one hand, can function. Can directly engage individuals who are so heavenly minded they're no earthly good, these Trinitized sons of destiny. But also that same creator son can walk in Jerusalem and get the most finite of dust on his feet. I mean, that's how profound a creator son is. They can engage those who are so earthly minded, they're no heavenly good, the masses that were constantly crowding around Jesus, and those who are so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good, and everything in between. They're the living links between time and eternity. Okay, let's chug into the creature Trinitized sons here.
8, the creature Trinitized sons. In addition to the creature Trinitized sons considered in this narrative, there are numerous unrevealed orders of creature Trinitized beings. The diverse progeny of the multiple liaisons of 7 Finaliter Core and Paradise Havona personalities. But all these creature Trinitized beings, revealed and unrevealed, are endowed with personality by the Universal Father.
Okay, so it's just the most general statement, reminding you you've got 7 different Finaliter Cores and, just a vast number of Paradise Havona beings, that they haven't even remotely revealed. You've got just a zillion different combinations in play. But it doesn't matter. All that complexity, the Father is overarching the whole thing. The Father is personalizing every one of these creatures, no matter how odd the combination that led to it. So they're, because the Father is personalizing, that's why they're all called. Starts with the word, it's a letter S. Trinitized sons. That's why they're called sons. If the Father personalizes a creature, it's called a son. That's what that word means. Okay. If the Father didn't personalize it, it cannot be called a son. That's what the word Son means. It means the Father is the source, it's a first source personality. Okay. You don't call a creative mother spirit a son, because it's not a first source personality. It's a third source personality. Okay. So even though we're talking about all these individuals, even if they're like purely just direct Trinity origin, no evolution or ascension or anything involved, just purely the Paradise Trinity brings this being into existence, if the Father personalizes it, it's called a Son. In some context, it's valid to call it a Son because the Father personalized it. If the Infinite Spirit personalized it, then that's a different matter. But as the Father did, it's a Son. Okay. So even though we, you know, as we've begun to recognize, the self, our self, is very much a Trinity origin phenomenon. But nonetheless, the Father personalizes, so you can call us sons. But, you know, you notice that they only, they'll call us ascending sons, or before that, faith sons. But once you're a finaliter, you know, it's much more the mother side that's up front, and there isn't such a tendency to call them finaliter sons. You know, they're out revealing the nature of God the Mother. Yes, they still have a first source personality, but it's not very illuminating to call them a son so much anymore, because that's not really the mode that they're functioning in. It's just, you know, in this, there's this father-son relationship, and you're trying to, you know, move along the line between the two of you. You know, you're an ascending son ascending towards the Father. But once you've done that, and you're off on, you know, on a different tangent, then, you know, they don't call them finaliter sons. Yeah, they just call them finaliters. All right. So there's that. Let's get into straightforward stuff here. Excuse me. Yeah.
When new ascender trinitized and Paradise Havona trinitized sons are young and untrained, they are usually dispatched for long periods of service on the seven paradise spheres of the Infinite Spirit, where they serve under the tutelage of the seven supreme executives. Subsequently, they may be adopted for further training in the local universes by the Trinity teacher sons. These adopted sons of high and glorified creature origin are the apprentices, student helpers of the teacher sons, and as regards classification, they are often temporarily numbered with these sons. They may and do execute many noble assignments in self-denial in behalf of their chosen realms of service. The teacher sons in the local universes may nominate their creature trinitized wards for embrace by the Paradise Trinity. Emerging from this embrace as trinitized sons of perfection, they enter the service of the Ancients of Days in the seven super universes, that being the present known destiny of this unique group of twice trinitized beings.
So there's that one. Remember, when we were going through the other types, you know, they were giving us some indication of how they got selected, you know, or whatever. Okay, so it's the Trinity teacher sons that are really responsible for differentiating which creature trinitized sons are going to become trinitized sons of perfection. Yeah, in other words, which ones are going to be embraced by the Paradise Trinity. So the eyes of the Paradise Trinity are the Trinity teacher sons in that regard. All right.
Not all creature trinitized sons are Trinity embraced. Many become the associates and ambassadors of the seven master spirits of paradise, of the reflective spirits of the super universes, and of the mother spirits of the local creations. Others may accept special assignments on the Eternal Isle. Still others may enter the special services on the secret worlds of the Father and on the paradise spheres of the Spirit. Eventually, many find their way into the conjoint core of the trinitized sons on the inner circuit of Havona.
Okay, just that last little bit. We'll get into that a little bit more when we get up to the secondary Supernafim, and you know, stepping through the circuits of Havona as they guide. Remember how they take you one circuit at a time and how they guide us? When you get to that inner circuit, the first circuit, that's they talk about this and how the great majority of the creature Trinitized sons end up there on the first circuit of Havana. And you got all these other things they might be up to, but you know, distinctly over 50% of them end up on the first circuit. Okay, so when they say many there, you know, really, yeah, over half or end up there.
Accepting the Trinitized Sons of Perfection and those who are foregathering on Vice Gerrington, the supreme destiny of all creature Trinitized Sons appears to be entrance into the core of Trinitized Finaliters, one of the seven paradise core of the finality.
Okay, so there's, you know, it's not very often they mention directly one of those other six cores. You know, it's almost always the finality core that they're talking about, the mortal finality core. So you have all these creature Trinitized sons, and they basically end up in three bins when all is said and done. Some of them end up as Trinitized sons of perfection. Some of them end up on Vice Gerrington, and the rest end up in one of those finality cores. Okay, so. You know, they're just trying to sort of put a little bow on it, obviously. It's like, you know, I mean, they can only tell us so much, but they can tell you, well, you know, it ends up, you got some here, and some here. So you have some that are really for the next age in a very antecedent following sort of a way, you know, ahead of their time there for the next age. You have those that are slowly working on getting there to the next age, the finaliters. And then those that are more, you know, you might suspect are more about the long-term aspect of the super-universe level. Because even when the grand universe is settled in line of life, someone has to be in charge of what used to be the seven super-universes. Remember how they always are mentioning those sorts of issues of, you know, what are the ancients of days going to do when the grand universe is settled in line of life? Well, they think they're going to continue, you know, to be part of the anchoring of the super-universe level. Other beings are going to go on to the outer space levels.
Yeah. Is that an architect commenting? What of the ancients of days? Do they still stay?
They definitely do. They can't leave, you know, their headquarters world. They really stab past. Okay, so then we have just these two sections where they give us a very little bit of directly about the two types of Trinitized Sons of Perfection. Mostly, as we read it, you'll see they want to just, the mighty messenger that's writing this wants to just talk about the nature of creature Trinitized Sons in general. And so threaded through both of these sections is a general discussion about creature Trinitized Sons with mention about these two specific flavors.
Nine, Celestial Guardians. Creature Trinitized Sons are embraced by the Paradise Trinity in classes of 7,000. These Trinitized offspring of perfected humans and of Paradise Havona personalities are all equally embraced by the deities, but they are assigned to the super universes in accordance with the advice of their former instructors, the Trinity Teacher Sons. Those of more acceptable service are commissioned High Sun Assistants. Those of less distinguished performance are designated Celestial Guardians.
Okay, so classes of 7,000. So it's that small class we've seen before, a small class size. And let's just do it right up front here. Distinguished and less distinguished, or more acceptable, as they say, and less distinguished. Why? You know, it seems like we're talking about, you know, especially as you start reading, it's going to sound like we're talking about the Alpheus twins. Right? Okay, but why do they manifest like this? I mean, they're these incredible creatures we've been talking about. Why do they end up like they're about to talk about them here? Again, like I said up front, remember what part of the finite they really span. That the thin little region up at the, you know, just below the ceiling of the finite. That's the only domain that they have sort of a direct relationship with. Because you went all, you ascended way up there and then made them up there. Okay? And they have no way to get a relationship to that whole domain that you ascended up through. So that's fundamentally the problem. And some of them are going to span most of that upper region. Some are going to just span a little bit of it, and then they're just going to have a very limited relationship to the finite. They're going to be kind of awkward. And then some, like the ones we aren't even talking about, don't have any relationship because they flipped up on the other side. They're really, really awkward. Okay, so awkward that, you know, they just, you know, sequester them. Okay.
Put them in storage.
All right. Okay, so that's what's going on. The smaller the region, you know, up near the ceiling that they have a relationship to, the more awkward they are in working down here in the bulk of the finite. They just can't relate. Yeah. So it seems like they're, they're very limited in mentality. It's not that they're limited in mentality; they're just limited in direct ability to relate to the finite. Okay. So it seems like they're stupid, you could say.
But it's
lack of experienceable potential. They can experience till they're blue in the face and nothing changes. Because all they can experience is up here. They can't acquire any relationship to what's down here.
Like a
doesn't matter how many hours of class they sit in, right. Nothing happens. They can't acquire experience to this stuff down here.
The savant.
Okay.
When these unique beings have been Trinity embraced, they become valuable adjuncts to the super universe governments. They are versed in the affairs of the ascended career, not by personal ascension, but as a result of their service with the Trinity Teacher's sons on the worlds of space. Almost 1 billion celestial guardians have been commissioned in Orvantun. They are chiefly assigned to the administrations of the perfections of days on the headquarters of the major sectors and are ably assisted by a core of ascendant sun-fused mortals.
Okay, so we have the small class size. We have even a bigger total number now. We got roughly a billion. And we were kind of surprised about the roughly half a billion. You know, the last time we had the 7,000 class size. So, in relative terms, compared to these three different types of suns, attainment, selection, and perfection. There's a lot of these. And they're combined with one of the most limited, rarefied groups, the sun-fused mortals. Remember, there's only about 1 million of them. 1 million in all of the super universe. Very, very, So you can imagine that might help the sun-fused mortals be able to be more effective if they're working in a bigger group. They can spread their ability around a little bit via these creature trinitized sons who are.
We don't know what their ability is.
Right, we don't know exactly. Yeah, we don't know much about it. But just abstractly, you can see that's kind of helpful that a pretty large number is working with this really small number. Mm-hmm. So the strength in numbers.
The celestial guardians are the officers of the courts of the Ancients of Days, functioning as court messengers and as bearers of the summonses and decidings of the various tribunals of the super universe governments. They are the apprehending agents of the Ancients of Days. They go forth from Eversa to bring back beings whose presence is required before the super universe judges. They execute the mandates for the detention of any personality in the super universe. They also accompany spirit-fused mortals of the local universes when, for any reason, their presence is required on Eversa.
And remember, we mentioned that when we were talking about spirit-fused mortals making it all the way up to paradise. This is how it starts. A celestial guardian goes out and calls them up. You've been called up to Eversa, for instance. But wouldn't you love to get this summons? You've been ordered to appear before the super universe judges.
Not so much.
There's a summons.
Crap out of me. Sounds like a police
Do you remember what the word expression is that they use for the Ancients of Days?
Executioners.
Well, there's that, but in a positive mode, they're called autocrats. Remember the autocracy that they are? Yes. Yeah.
The celestial guardians and their associates, the high sun assistants, have never been indwelt by adjusters. Neither are they spirit nor sun fused. The embrace of the paradise trinity does, however, compensate for the non-fused status of the trinitized sons of perfection. The trinity embrace may act solely upon the idea which is personified in a creature trinitized son, leaving the embraced son otherwise unchanged. But such a limitation occurs only when so planned.
Okay, well, that's a neat little thing to throw in. So, okay, remember what fundamentally what the Trinity embrace is doing, and that we can immediately understand that totality attitude functioning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Trinity embraces them, and it completes something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got something that's perfect, but it's not complete. So, but instead of completing the whole creature, the Trinity embrace might just complete the idea and not the whole creature. Well, it wouldn't be too surprising if one of those creatures might have an awkward time relating to things.
Yeah.
You know, they would be not only up there towards the ceiling, but incomplete at that.
But not within their own sphere of operation.
A lot of times the sphere of operation is just, you know, being that idea.
Yeah.
And that idea is complete. At least that idea is complete. But just, you know, that's one of the subtexts there. That's why they're saying that. Just as a reminder, this is another way that this creature could be kind of awkward. The Trinity didn't even give them a general completeness like it gives, say, a mighty messenger. Okay. Could give them this very narrow completeness. And then the rest of them is sort of just waiting for the next age. You know, so they have a bit of what gets sequestered with the trinitized sons. See, in other words, something that really just doesn't relate much to anything. But a little nugget, because the Trinity's completed it, that does relate in some way.
Like
someone, oh, yeah.
Is it like they have a specialized tool that's needed? And
yeah, you'll see they're going to mention that. Exactly. Yeah. They're a perfect crescent wrench when a crescent wrench is needed. Yeah. Yeah. Or a 5/8-inch, you know, open end wrench or whatever. Yes. Very, very precise tool if it's needed.
These twice trinitized sons are marvelous beings, but they are neither as versatile nor dependable as their ascendant associates. They lack that tremendous and profound personal experience which the rest of the sons belonging to this group have acquired by actually climbing up to glory from the dark domains of space.
That would be here.
We of the ascendant career love them and do all in our power to compensate their deficiencies. But they make us ever grateful for our lowly origin and our capacity for experience. Their willingness to recognize and acknowledge their deficiencies in the experienceable realities of universe ascension is transcendentally beautiful and sometimes most touchingly pathetic.
The classic line in the book. The touchingly pathetic line. Yes, we finally reached it. Yeah, so in other words, you feel it in the pit of your stomach, pathetic, you know, pathos, suffering. It's that strong. I mean, it's like, oh dear, they're so limited. It makes me hurt and, you know, bend over, almost in pain.
But it's not like they're in bondage or anything.
No,
I mean,
no. Were the Alpheus twins cheerful?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, as you'll see, deep down, you know, they yearn for to be set free, to have greater experiential potential, but that's not till the next age.
Yeah.
They have to wait till the next age.
What's an age between friends?
All right.
Trinitized sons of perfection are limited in contrast to other Trinity-embraced sons because their experiential capacity is time-space inhibited. They are experience deficient. Despite long training with the supreme executives and the teacher sons, and if this were not the case, experiential saturation would preclude their being left in reserve for acquiring experience in a future universe age. There is simply nothing in all universal existence which can take the place of actual personal experience, and these creature trinitized sons are held in reserve for experiential function in some future universe epoch.
I see. So, again, there's saturation of experience. It's not like they haven't gotten enough experience. They're saturated. It's just that the domain that's saturated is very limited. It's clear up there by the ceiling. And you know, any more, I mean, it's already saturated. You can't put any more in there. They just have no ability to have any experiential relationship with most of the finite domain.
It's strange to me.
Yeah, or things like that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That they're called Trinitized sons of perfection when they have that lack.
Yeah, and we talked about that when we started this paper. It's very important to remember the technical use in the book of the words perfection and completion. I go from here to paradise and become a finaliter. I'm now perfect, but I'm not even anywhere near complete. I'm insanely incomplete still. So I'm perfect but incomplete. Complete is greater than perfection in the book. So you, if you're a spirit-fused mortal, I always bring this up, let's do it again. If you're a spirit-fused mortal, you ascend from your mortal sphere up to your local universe headquarters, and you are inducted into that local universe's core of perfection. So you go upward to perfection and begin and are put in a core of perfection. And then they go horizontally. They use the word penetration. You have ascension and penetration. You penetrate the wholeness of that local universe. And when you finally have accumulated a relationship to the whole of it, you're complete. And you're put into a core of completion. And so that's always the way it works. And so what's happening here, you've got beings that have either ascended to perfection or are made in perfection. So they've got the first part. They've got the perfect part or the perfected part. Then the question is, how much relationship do they have to completeness? What the Trinity is doing is giving all these beings we're reading about in this paper some measure of completeness by fiat. Instead of having to go through a long experiential process of penetrating some vast domain of experience and getting complete evolutionarily, the Paradise Trinity, because of its totality attitude, its completeness, just gives them completeness by fiat. But when it does that, that means it's short-circuited. The normal process of experience leading to growth. Those creatures don't grow anymore once the Trinity is completed and by fiat. They experience, but they don't grow from that experience. So mighty messengers, you know, live on for trillions and trillions of years, but don't grow one iota. Because this Paradise Trinity is basically short-circuited the voltage between perfection and the grand universe being settled in light and life. It's taken that opportunity away from you of experientially rolling through that whole evolutionary process and acquiring something growing, like a snowball growing.
Okay.
Yep.
Being on a planet like this is just an incredible thing.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't waste, I don't want to waste another minute thinking it's a terrible thing because it's incredible. incredible.
Yeah, and they're just about, you know, in a little bit they're going to make that point, that very point of trying to get you to, you know, what relevance does this have to you? Very immediately, it's that recognition, okay?
On the mansion worlds, I have often seen these dignified officers of the high courts of the super universe look so longingly and appealingly at even the recent arrivals from the evolutionary worlds of space that one could not help realizing that these possessors of non-experiential trinitization really envied their supposedly less fortunate brethren who ascend the universal path by steps of bona fide experience and actual living. Notwithstanding their handicaps and limitations, they are a wonderfully useful and ever-willing corps of workers when it comes to the execution of the complex administrative plans of the super-universe government.
So this being that was birthed by this incredible process on the Isle of Paradise, you know, is down there on a first mansion world, you know, watching a primitive human being resurrected and looking longingly. Because that, you know, that most primitive of persons in the entire universe has access to something that they have not the slightest access to.
But they appreciate it.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, they appreciate it in a big time way.
Yeah. But it's, again, it's like I say, I mean, it's not the kind of, you know, envy, quote unquote, like, you know, that we would mean to think. It's, they're looking to, oh, I can hardly wait for my age to come.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next age when I can be like that ascender, you know, doing the first steps in an incredible journey. You know, they can just, that's what they're longing for, to be taking their first steps like that creature is. You know?
No, I think it's they can't fully appreciate it because appreciation comes from experience. So that's what they wish they could appreciate it more.
Well, they have a recognition that they lack it.
Right. Yeah.
But
yeah.
The appreciation, they haven't the capacity to appreciate it. Because they haven't the experience.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you want to get real technical about it, yes. Right. Which we do in this group a lot. They very much, they've experienced what those lowly creatures can do. They appreciate that, you know, but they don't appreciate directly that experience, yes. Yeah. They appreciate the repercussions of that experience, you know. Okay.
10, High Sun Assistants. The High Sun Assistants are the superior group of the re-trinitized sons of glorified ascendant beings of the mortal core of the finality and of their eternal associates, the Paradise Havana personalities.
They're just showing off. I mean, that sentence, I mean, just look at that sentence. He's like purposely put all the details into that sentence. It's really a funny sentence. Did he have to repeat all of that? It's pretty funny.
They're assigned to the super universe service and function as personal aides to the high sons of the governments of the ancients of days. They might fittingly be denominated private secretaries. They act from time to time as clerks for special commissions and other group associations of the High Sons. They serve perfectors of wisdom, divine counselors, universal censors, mighty messengers, those high in authority, and those without name and number.
Yeah, see, so in this context, you know, High Sun assistants, well, who are High Sons? Those six, the other six we read about. So just making sure it's, you know, it's clear to you why they're called that. So for this context, they're calling those six types high suns. Obviously, they're not as high as, you know, some higher sun, but then, of course, it's called high suns, not most high suns. So you've just, you know, see, we're kind of, notice this is the last thing they're telling us about, and you're putting a bow on it. This is how this works. All the things that we learned about going up to this, you know, now you think of those as a group, and you've got the assistance for them. And here's where we get to what Katie was, you know, bringing up about the transcendent value that's embodied in these creature trinitized sons. This is where you finally see it in action.
If in discussing the celestial guardians, I have seemed to call attention to the limitations and handicaps of these twice trinitized sons, let me now, in all fairness, call attention to their one point of great strength, the attribute which makes them almost invaluable to us. These beings owe their very existence to the fact that they are the personification of a single and supreme concept. They are the personality embodiment of some divine idea, some universal ideal, as it has never before been conceived, expressed, or trinitized. And they have been subsequently been Trinity embraced. Thus they show forth and actually embody the very wisdom of the divine Trinity as concerns the idea ideal of their personality existence. As far as that particular concept is revealable to the universes, these personalities embody all of everything that any creature or creator intelligent could possibly conceive, express, or exemplify. They are that idea personified.
So how complete is the completeness that the Paradise Trinity is bestowing in them?
Yeah.
And look at that.
Yeah.
All of everything that any creature or creator.
Yeah.
So this kind of awkward creature embodies everything that even a creator could conceive, express, or exemplify. Pretty profound little nugget.
It's a lot of amplitude. Small band.
Yeah. But it's call attention to their one point of great strength. That's it. Just this one point. Everything else is kind of shaky. And they need lots of assistance in getting around through life.
Good comparison.
Can you not see that such living concentrations of a single supreme concept of universe reality would be of untold service to those who are entrusted with the administration of the super universes? Not long since, I was directed to head a commission of six, one of each of the high suns, assigned to the study of three problems pertaining to a group of new universes in the south parts of Orvantan. I was made acutely aware of the value of the High Sun assistance when I made requisition on the chief of their order on Uversa for temporary assignment of such secretaries to my commission. The first of our ideas was represented by a High Sun assistant on Uversa who was forthwith attached to our group. Our second problem was embodied in a High Sun assistant assigned to Super Universe number 3. We secured much help from this source through the Central Universe Clearinghouse for the coordination and dissemination of essential knowledge, but nothing comparable to the assistance afforded by the actual presence of a personality who is a concept creature trinitized in supremacy and deity trinitized in finality. Concerning our third problem, the records of Paradise disclosed that such an idea had never been creature trinitized.
Okay, so there's some fun things in there. I mean, just that last little bit. So, when we're talking about this concept, idea, and all this, to bring it to a point, I mean, concerning our third problem, the records of Paradise disclosed that that such an idea had never been creature trinitized. So, I mean, obviously, they're trying to remind you, don't think, very fuzzy and abstract or mystical or anything about this. I mean, something really gritty down in the trenches where the rubber meets the road is this idea that's being creature trinitized. Something that's very practical and directly applicable. They are the solution to a problem.
The living.
Yeah. And then again, reminding you of even through the incredible dissemination abilities of Havona, you can't replace personal presence. Our next, the next paper is all about that, the solitary messengers, how indispensable they are. Notice here, they didn't mention anything. It was like, well, what about the other creature Trinitized sons? I mean, it, you know, there's a billion celestial guardians. Each one of them is an idea. They're not even talking about them. I see you're starting to see. They may be the embodiment of an idea that would be useful, but they can't be brought into usefulness because they're so, you know, stuck up at the ceiling and can't really relate to, you know, what you need. So it's just these limited number, as you'll see, of high sun assistants. The ones that have that span a little bit more space and hence can actually make their idea, you know, can express their idea. I mean, they're so awkward, those other ones, they can't even give voice to the idea that's within them.
Why did they come so far ahead of time, I wonder?
Well, of course, you know, the answer to that is, that's just the bias of our perspective. You know, what's the reality of it? It all comes from the top down.
Not really ahead of anything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it seems like it to us, but yeah, we're just experiencing it that diameter through it. Okay, then the other thing is, you know, what's between the lines here about what's relevant to you? You look at your life, and you're saying, you know, I'm worthless. I mean, what good am I? I mean, I can't. No, think about it. Is there one little thing, one point? Is there just one point of value? If you put yourself in a system, you can be of immeasurable usefulness. You know, if you recognize that you're very limited, don't worry about it. Penetrate to the core of your nature. Find the one thing that's pure and find the place where that puzzle piece belongs. Put yourself in the system that needs that, where you'll be indispensable. Don't worry about the fact that you're not vast. You have a whole ascension to career become vast. Unlike these individuals. Okay. So that's the truth that's coursing through this paragraph, how it's relevant to your day-to-day life. There's a lot of humans that are struggling and despairing because of they recognize how limited they are, how seemingly small they are. Nothing is small if it's part of the whole, if it's related to the whole. And through the individuality of the whole, if it's part of the cosmic system, the smallest thing affects everything. If it's in the cosmic system.
And you're vital.
Right. This distinction is vital. You know, it will give your life meaning. Okay? So no matter how small or large you are, when all is said and done, it doesn't matter, that quantitative difference. You know, it's the quality of your relationship to the cosmic system that's important. Take delight in cultivating, being plugged into the cosmic system. And no matter how small you are, you will be richly blessed with meaning in your life. That little thing will find value. There will be meaning. Things, meanings, values. Okay?
And that's glorious.
High sun assistants are unique and original personalization of tremendous concepts and stupendous ideals. And as such, they are able to impart inexpressible illumination to our deliberations from time to time. When I am acting on some remote assignment out in the universes of space, think what it means by way of assistance if I am so fortunate as to have attached to my mission a high sun assistant who is the fullness of divine concept regarding the very problem I have been sent to attack and solve. And I have repeatedly had this very experience. The only difficulty with this plan is that no super universe can have a complete edition of these Trinitized ideals. Ideas. We only get 1/7 of these beings, so it is only about 1 time in 7 that we enjoy the personal association of these beings, even when the records indicate that the idea has been trinitized. We could use to great advantage much larger numbers of these beings on Uversa. Because of their value to the superuniverse administrations, we in every way possible encourage the pilgrims of space and also the residents of paradise to attempt trinitization after they have contributed to one another those experiential realities which are essential to the enactment of such creative adventures.
Now, don't forget that. he's telling you right now. when you get to paradise, don't forget what I told you. Please, please try to trinitize. Because we desperately need. This is kind of a hilarious thing. You're thinking, okay, I'll try to remember that.
Somebody was trying to remind me.
Write it on my hand or something. it's kind of a hilarious thing.
Because I know I'm going to be working on a third problem, and you might be the guy.
You might be the solution, you know, a trillion years from now. Yep. That's a pretty fun little thing he throws in there.
What do they mean when they say we only get 1/7 of these beings?
Just like all of these things we've been reading, you have a class of 7,000 in this case, and 1,000 go to each super universe, and they can't cross over. So if the solution for your problem goes to super universe number 3, you're out of luck in super universe number 7. You just get the indirect stuff through the central clearinghouse, like they said.
I thought that trinitization only happened when it was a unique idea.
Yeah,
so
it is. But they do it in classes. When there's 7,000 unique ideas.
But then it sounds like they're asking for some duplication.
No, they're just asking for as many as possible. As we're about to read the next paragraph, you'll see there's not a lot of them in play here. Everyone is unique. And he's just saying they're so valuable. It's so much easier to solve a problem if I have one of these than when I don't. You know, I can solve it nothing flat when I've got a creature trinitized sun. Otherwise, it takes me forever to solve the problem.
The other 6 times, I don't get that.
Yeah, right. Most of the time, I don't get that. And, you know, see, he's almost, you know, just begging, you know. Again, he's envious.
Yeah.
See? And, again, just, you know, look at the facts. I mean, he's constrained. He has to function in that form. It's like, well, I mean, that seems ridiculous. I mean, why couldn't God just send out? No, that's not the Father's way. He's given these. You've got to figure this out without a creature trinitized son. And he rolls his eyes. All right, I'll do it again. It's going to take me a million years. There's these harsh boundaries in the evolutionary process, and they just are. And see, again, you know, you can obviously recognize the truth for you there. You know, if a mighty messenger is constantly coming up against the limitations, you know, and he has the direct ear of the ancients of days, then how much are we going to come up against this? You have to learn that the form is not ultimately limiting, no matter how limited the form is. You can do great things in the most limited of forms if you're patient. If you give it the appropriate time. Adam and Eve's form was as about a limited form as any Adam and Eve ever had to work within. A little thimble of space is all they got. Normally you get a great big cathedral of space, okay? They got a thimble. Okay? Everything would have worked out perfectly if you just give it enough time. The only difference is time. Small form, big form, they equalize out in the end through time.
Assistant, no assistant.
Be patient. Don't think there's no way I can do anything on this planet right now. Every form, every institution is too stupid, too limited. I need to start a revolution. I need to break down all the walls. I need to remake all the forms. No, that's rebellion. Okay? You've been given a task, just like this mighty messenger, to do something great in the little thimble with all the stupid ideas that's in it. That's your job. Not to make better ideas, but to use those ideas, those limited ideas, to good. That's our job. Beings a million years from now will do things in a bigger space. That's not your job. You're supposed to do things with what forms are here, not revolt against the forms. And that's why Jesus said what he said there in the last temple discourse. That's so harsh. He describes in endless detail just how tiny and benighted the little space those people were living in. And then he said, but don't even think of breaking down those walls. You must work within that space. The moment that you break them down and think that you have the right to reform those forms rather than the Supreme, you're in rebellion. You're falling into the same trap that Lucifer did. Obey those hopeless leaders in terms of civil affairs. That's the form that you're supposed to live in. And that find the divinity in that form, even though it's limited. That's our challenge. Same challenge that this guy has after trillions of years of seniority in the cosmos. Yeah. All right. Yep.
The confusing thing about that is we work within those forms, but we can work for change for the better without doing something drastic. I mean, we don't want to...
Right, but how do you do that? That you there is growth, you figure out how to see it, and you try to strike step with it. The Supreme is gonna change the forms. And the Supreme would love to have your help. Remember how in the Supreme papers that, are you going to drop the ball for the Supreme? Remember when that really strong paragraph? I mean, the Supreme would love your help, but you've got to figure out what the Supreme is doing and work with that. Okay, well, I don't need to figure out what the Supreme is doing. I can see Aaron clearly. I'm innately right. It's a self-righteous thing. It's where you try to change without striking step with the growth. Change without growth is
potential evil.
You have this great desire for better forms. And you don't take delight in cultivating, being able to see the flow of the Supreme and striking step with it. You just try to make the forms in your divine image. You'll get the opposite result you're looking for. You won't get better forms. You'll get the collapse of form. You'll get anarchy, chaos. You have to be able to see what the Supreme is doing and strike step with it.
It looks to me like the Supreme is letting itself destruct right now.
Yeah, that's the first challenge, is to change that viewpoint, is to see, because you're not see, if you see that which is waning, you're not looking at the Supreme. The Supreme can't do anything but progress. So what to be able to, that's the way you do what I was just saying. How do you see the Supreme? Is in the midst of darkness, can you see the light and that it's moving? Or do you just fixate on the darkness? Okay? There's always light. There's always the presence of the Supreme. And it's always progressing. It can't go backward one nanometer. Not the slightest bit. It's always progressing. Rebellion and default didn't change it one iota. It just kept right on progressing. Because that's all it can do. So if you can see that, it always is shining through in every situation, that progressing phenomenon. You want to be a progressive. instead of a progressivist, you don't want to be self-righteous. You have to be able to see the progressor, the supreme. Find what is progressing in front of you and strike step with it, rather than, well, this is not progressing, so I'm going to change it and make it move. No, that's not progressing because the supreme doesn't want that to progress right now.
Oh, I think that was my point.
Yeah. Some of it's going to fall. Find away. What's progressing.
Some of it's going to self-destruct and fall away. And it's not.
Yeah, and it's supposed to. That, I mean, some things are supposed to fall away. Some things the mother is taking her hand out from underneath, and they're supposed to fall for the greater good. But you go, oh my gosh, this is falling, and so you drop everything and you try to, you know, it's ridiculous. Look for what's progressing, not for what isn't. See, this is, you've heard me say, the problem is not imperfection. The problem is people who think that imperfection is the problem. That's the problem. That's the emergency that brought this book to us. There are spiritually conscious people who think that imperfection is the problem. They think that the parts that aren't progressing are the problem. No. You need to consecrate yourself to finding the parts that are progressing and striking step with that. Letting the Supreme work through you to help that progression. Trust that the parts that aren't progressing are not progressing for a reason. It's not because God is blind in one eye and is missing that part of the picture. It's like, oh my gosh, he's forgotten about this. This isn't progressing. It's a good thing I can see it. I better fix this. That's called self-righteousness. Okay? No. The universe doesn't need you to fix it, but it would like you to help its progression. Find its progression. What thing in the United States is progressing? Forget about the things that aren't. Find the things that are and foster that. That's what you're supposed to do. Trust that things will all work out. Some things that aren't, that seem to you like they aren't progressing, actually are, but they're over an extremely long time scale, which is vastly longer than your lifetime. You probably can't help with those things. You know, if you lived 500 years, maybe you could strike step with those really, really slow progressing. You find something that's progressing at your temporal rate, the time, the kind of motion that you can see, and work with it.
Mm-hmm. That was great.
All right.
We now have in our super universe about 1.25 million high sun assistants, and they serve on both the major and minor sectors, even as they function on Universa. They very often accompany us on our assignments to the remote universes. High Sun assistants are not permanently assigned to any sun or to any commission. They are in constant circulation, serving where the idea or ideal which they are can best further the eternal purposes of the Paradise Trinity, whose sons they have become.
Okay, so just one little thing, the quantitative. See, there's just, you know, it's about the same as the sun fusers. It's just 1.25 million in each super universe. That's so think about of all the countless trillions of finaliters and paradise of owners. The handful that have made creature trinitized suns that are useful. It's a pretty small number.
Yeah.
Do you remember when we were talking about paradise and the residences for the finaliters, how, you know, we were talking about numbers that were, you know, almost beyond that we've given names for?
Yeah.
Okay. It's just an insane number. Okay. 1.25 million relative to that huge number is almost nothing. This is a really rarefied little thing. And that's why he's going, please, ascend, go, and get up there and trinitize. We need some help here. Very, very rarefied group, you know, comparison to the ones that are a little bit awkward.
Yeah.
the custodians.
They are touchingly affectionate, superbly loyal, exquisitely intelligent, supremely wise regarding a single idea, and transcendentally humble. While they can impart to you the lore of the universe concerning their one idea or ideal, it is well-nigh pathetic to observe them seeking knowledge and information on hosts of other subjects, even from the ascending mortals.
There it is again. And I should have said celestial guardians, not custodians. I'm getting that other group.
I've never seen a blob of solder before. Can you help me?
And that little dig there, even from ascending mortals. Wait a minute, I take offense at that. So...
Come on, you knucklehead, I can help you.
Give him a noogie. All right, so you can see, again, he's just bringing that up, that, so even in the case of these high sun assistants, you know, they can really put their idea out there, but beyond that, it's pretty awkward.
That's funny.
Yep. Well nigh pathetic.
Yeah.
All right, let's finish it up here.
And this is the narrative of the origin, nature, and functioning of certain of those who are called the Trinitized Sons of God, more particularly of those who have passed through the divine embrace of the Paradise Trinity, and who have then been assigned to the services of the super universes, there to give wise and understanding cooperation with the administrators of the Ancients of Days in their untiring efforts to facilitate the inward progress of the ascending mortals of time toward their immediate Havona destination and their eventual paradise goal. Narrated by a mighty messenger of the revelatory core of Orvantum.
Ta-da! All right, So there's the Sons of God. And next time we'll launch into the next block of papers on the spirit origin beings. And I believe there's 6 papers, if I remember right, in this block. So a lot bigger block than these ones where we've been going through the Supreme Spirits and the Trinity origin beings and the Sons of God. So next we... And that's appropriate, because remember what they said way back, that there is just almost an uncountable number of different flavors of spirit origin beings. You know, they're just revealing a handful. There's just endless numbers that they aren't revealing. And so they're going to try to give us a little entry into that, and it all starts out with some people's favorite flavor, the solitary messengers. So that's where we'll begin next time here. Let's take a moment.